It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The president today lashed out on Twitter, ripping comedian Kathy Griffin for a photo showing her holding a mocked severed head of the president. President Trump tweeting, quote, Kathy Griffin should be ashamed of herself. My children, especially my 11-year-old son Barron, are having a hard time with this. Sick. The photo drew a rare public rebuke from the First Lady in a statement to Fox News saying, quote, as a mother, a wife, and a human being, that photo is very disturbing. When you consider some of the atrocities happening in the world today, a photo opportunity like this is simply wrong. It makes you wonder about the mental health of the person who did it.
That was John Roberts on Special Report last night. This is Sandy Rios, and isn't it true? What more can be said? You know, Kathy Griffin is from my hometown of Chicago. I don't know if she ever has been really funny, but she's trying to be funny now. But it kind of shows you the depravity to which we've sunk. I don't know if you go to movies. I've certainly been in a million of them, and I don't do this so much anymore because I just can't bear it. But the one thing I noticed, it wasn't just the sexuality and the language, but several years ago, they started folding in all of this violence. And then I noticed people would laugh, like horrible things would happen to people and the audience would break out in laughter. And I knew it at the time. I never experienced that before. I thought, what is this exactly? And this is just pure evil. It's the desensitizing of us to violence, to evil, laughing, even if it's fantasy. And I think that's probably what set up a comedian who would actually pose in a picture of a beheaded president, all bloody, and like that's something that's supposed to be funny, and expecting people to laugh about it. You know, my understanding is that Barron Trump was watching television when the image came on, and was so upset and ran to his mother. I think he's 11 years old. You know, it just that in itself, of course, that's a different issue. But how dare Kathy Griffin and the photographer and the people in which we find ourselves living, with which we find ourselves living, take us in this direction of coarsening? And really, honestly, I'm challenging all of you, whatever it is you're watching or if you're taking in movies and you become desensitized, it's time for a conscience check on this, because we've gone way too far. This is so far from the holiness of God. Remember that God, even in Genesis, early on before the commandments were ever given, talked about shedding human life. It was a big deal to God. If you take innocent human life, your life will be taken. I realize Kathy Griffin didn't take anyone's life, but it is not funny to God. It's a very serious thing to take life. It's one of the commandments, and again, it's pre-commandment in terms of its sacredness to a holy God. We have to stop this. There's an interesting piece in the New York Post, and I want to read a little bit of it to you. It says, imagine living in a bubble so impermeable it didn't occur to you that retailing a photograph of a decapitated president's head would be a horrendous career move. A bubble in which you don't know anyone who doesn't think the world would be a better place once Donald Trump had his head cut off. That is the world Kathy Griffin lives in. And that's why she was so excited to pose for this picture. That's why she sent it to TMZ. That's why she initially defended the picture to the journalist Yasser Ali by claiming it was art. And why wouldn't she think this? In the bubble in which she lives, in the world in which she travels, in the frame of reference in which she nestles like a baby nestling in a Moses basket, it must have seemed to Kathy Griffin that there could be no way she could go too far if the object of her unspeakable provocation was Donald Trump. In fact, she must have believed the further she would be willing to go, the more praise her action would be likely to engender. That was not an unreasonable belief. Stephen Colbert took to the CBS airwaves and used a word to describe Trump that would have gotten him fired had he used it about Barack Obama. Only he would never have used such a word about Barack Obama. His show's ratings have only continued to surge in the wake of it. What would your takeaway be if you were Kathy Griffin? You might take one look at the cover of Village Magazine's February issue, in which Trump appears in the crosshairs of a rifle sight, and figure it got a lot of attention for that. So imagine how much more attention I might get for this. Griffin probably figured others had crossed the line before her, so she wasn't really crossing a line at all. Or maybe she figured where Trump is concerned, there is no line. Oh, sure, the Yahoos would scream, but such screams would surely sound like 1,000 angels singing to Kathy's friends and employers. Their agony would only be a sign to her the stunt had truly hit home. Yes, what could be more wonderfully easy and satisfying than to be provocative when you think that the people you will truly provoke are the people you and your community of like-minded show business progressives despise? When Griffin realized it was horror rather than "you go, girl" admiration she had provoked, and not just among the Yahoos, but with everybody with a soul enough to understand she was normalizing an image of a presidential assassination, she tossed the photograph onto the trash heap of history. So I guess I find myself wondering, could this be a turning point in which people understand how accelerated and irrational the hatred of Donald Trump and the disregard for his family, his life, it's mob violence. It is something we do not want to become, do we? Even on the left, is this what you want to become? Where you actually start cutting, pretending to cut off heads and enjoying it? That's just the precursor to actually doing it. And so I just hope and pray this is a turning point. And that brings me to something that I think is actually relevant to this. Many of us said that when the Ten Commandments were removed from the public view, when they were taken out of classroom, I don't think I even realized, honestly. I knew it intellectually, but I don't think I realized how removing God from the public square and the knowledge of him, the knowledge of "thou shalt not kill, respect your parents, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery." This thing, taking away the knowledge of the basic rules of human behavior laid down by the Creator, would actually make people stupid about God. I honestly thought that people would inherently understand some of this, but we haven't, and we've seen what's happened to the generations that have followed, and now it's becoming, decades anyway. And so with that, we are starting something today that we, the American Family Association, we have created In God We Trust wristbands. They're lovely. You can wear them on your arm, and it's just a statement. In God we trust. In God we trust. Since 1977, the AFA has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand, and we have trusted him. And for 40 years, AFA has fought side by side with you for those biblical principles that our nation was founded on. And from the beginning, many have opposed "In God We Trust" as our national motto, but people of faith have embraced it as a rallying cry. Well, this is the 40th year celebration of AFA, and we'd like to remind America again of the truth of the message of our national motto. We'd like to encourage you as we wear and share the "In God We Trust" wristbands with your family, your church, and your community. And buy these. These are free. And you could order them and give them away. And in fact, July 4th is coming up. It would be a great gift to give to your family and friends on the 4th of July or in honor of it. And so the thing I don't have here, you go to afa.net/trustgod. afa.net/trustgod. And you can order all that you need, I guess. I don't even know that there's a limit. If there is, they didn't send it to me. So order what you want and give them away freely, wear them and enjoy them, and let's kind of set a marker. As maybe inconsequential as this sounds, I really do think just the knowledge of God is a good place to start. God, there is a God. There are boundaries in our behavior, and this is something we need to reclaim. So I hope that you'll take advantage of it. It's afa.net/trustgod. afa.net/trustgod, and of course it'll be on our Facebook page and all over AFA.net and any other outlet that we have, so you can find that information. Well, there was big news yesterday, and it was delivered by one of my favorite reporters, James Rosen. Let's listen.
Fox News has confirmed that the FBI and CIA and the National Security Agency were all served today with subpoenas issued by the House Intelligence Committee. Sources said each of these subpoenas referenced unmasking and each named as figures of interest three senior Obama-era officials. Former White House National Security Advisor Susan Rice was identified by multiple news organizations last month as someone who requested that names of Trump associates that had appeared in coded form in classified intelligence reports be identified for her or unmasked. Rice at the time denied wrongdoing and told us today through a spokesperson that she is unaware of any subpoenas, quote, directed at her. Former CIA Director John Brennan was also named on the subpoenas. In testimony last week, Brennan decried the leaks of classified information that have bedeviled the Trump administration and which some believe was linked to the unmasking activity. Brennan declined our request for comment. Most noteworthy was the subpoena's naming of Samantha Power. The former UN ambassador has not previously surfaced in the unmasking controversy. A Pulitzer Prize-winning historian, Power served in Barack Obama's Senate office before joining his administration. House investigators told Fox News they are now devoting greater scrutiny to Power because they have come to see her role in the unmasking as larger than previously known, allegedly eclipsing the others named. Contacted by Fox News today, Power declined to comment.
All right, that's the first part of it, and we're going to get to the next part of it. Remember yesterday we talked to a former CIA official, and we discussed, not in small part, CIA Director John Brennan, who voted for the Communist Party candidate in 1980. When we were in the middle of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And he's the CIA director. He's at the center of the suspicion of leaks. Susan Rice, he just mentioned, and now the new name, Samantha Power. Now, this gets even more interesting because James points out John Brennan appearing in a hearing before Congress. Listen to this.
Today's disclosures about Samantha Power may explain a somewhat cryptic exchange that occurred at the Brennan hearing last week, initiated by Republican Congressman Trey Gowdy of South Carolina.
Do you recall any U.S. ambassadors asking that names be unmasked?
I don't know. Maybe it's ringing a vague bell, but I could not answer with any confidence.
Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, Republican of California, seen at screen left, signed a total of seven subpoenas. The other four were at the behest of ranking Democrat Adam Schiff, also of California, at screen right. These were said to be duplicative of ones already issued by the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is conducting a parallel probe of allegations of collusion last year between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. Both President Trump and the Russians have denied those allegations. The subpoenas instigated by Schiff are focused on Michael Flynn, President Trump's former national security advisor, and Michael Cohen, a longtime Trump attorney. Cohen has denied colluding with the Kremlin. Flynn, through attorneys, has sought immunity in exchange for congressional testimony. The issuance of the subpoenas was first reported by the Wall Street Journal.
All right, so let me remind you, it's only a few weeks ago that Devin Nunes came out before reporters after going into a portion of the White House and reading these top secret documents that revealed what seemed to be very dangerous unmasking, including members of the Trump administration in these top-secret phone calls that were surveilled, evidently, by the FBI and other top-secret agencies. It's an amazing story. And then Devin Nunes went quiet, remember? He was the bad guy because he tried to bring that to our attention, and the House brought him under ethics charges. And so that's why he's been so silent, because that's what they do. That's the weapon that they use. And so, but Devin Nunes evidently is busy still, even though he is silent. And this is good news. Maybe, just maybe, justice will be done. And by the way, Rasmussen is reporting this morning that 53% of you polled said that media leaks are an act of treason. That's encouraging to me, too. So we need to do something, get a handle on this. All right, this afternoon, the president is expected to declare whether he's going to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. We'll talk about that next. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Okay, guys, who's got the lawn chairs?
Check.
Bug spray?
Right here.
Sunscreen?
32 gallons of sunscreen. Check.
And God We Trust wristbands?
Wristbands, check. When you head out to your Independence Day celebration, take lots of In God We Trust wristbands. They're an effective way to remind those you see that America's heritage is one of trusting in the one true God. Since 1977, your American Family Association has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand as we've trusted in Him. Get your free wristband today and order more to give away. Why not get 40 in honor of the American Family Association's 40th anniversary? The In God We Trust wristbands are available at afa.net/trustgod. That's afa.net/trustgod.
Shark repellent.
Check.
What? Mom!
I'm just joking.
Hi, this is Ron Ball, and this is your Choose Greatness Minute. Our daughter Allison is the elected state treasurer of Kentucky. Recently, she spoke at an event, and her mom and I went to hear her. When she finished, a person turned to me and said, "How did your daughter get so good?" I said, "That's simple. We did everything in her life on purpose. We based everything on Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way they should go. We put her on stage in front of thousands of people when she was 8 years old so she could learn public speaking. We taught her to own and operate her own business when she was 9 years old. We taught her to tithe her income. We led her to Christ at the earliest possible moment. Everything was done on purpose. Do you want to unlock the greatness of your children and grandchildren? Do everything on purpose for the glory of God. Learn more at choosegreatness.com. That's choosegreatness.com. choosegreatness.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
We need to have a conversation, America. It's about Kathy Griffin and that fake severed head of President Trump. Well, it turns out the president's 11-year-old son, Barron, was watching television, and when the news came on, he saw the bloody, gory head. The poor kid thought it was actually his father. So Barron did what any child would do. He panicked, screamed for his mom. This from the reporting of TMZ.com. President Trump said his little boy's having a hard time dealing with the images he saw. First Lady Melania Trump called Ms. Griffin's behavior disturbing and wrong, even wondered about her mental health. Something's not right in our country, folks. The violence and the vitriol coming from the left is just mean. This kind of behavior is simply unacceptable in a civilized society. But I'm afraid it may be too much to ask for civility these days. So how about we just settle for some human decency instead? I'm Todd Stearns.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
It would send to the rest of the world a message that the United States does not care about this planet that we all share.
This is no longer, oh, he's doing his thing. This is endangering the world.
If we stand alone to face this global crisis, it's more than reckless. I mean, we are really endangering the planet, the American people, and our economy at a really fragile stage.
Yeah, well, that's the brilliance of television commentators last night on the Paris Climate Treaty, which the president says he's going to be announcing his decision on the Paris Accord today at 3 o'clock. And, you know, it's interesting because yesterday morning the headline was that he was withdrawing, and now then part of his staff said, well, maybe he's not withdrawing, and now he says he is withdrawing. But just as an aside, let me just talk about, just for a second. That montage of you heard Whoopi Goldberg, and I'm not sure who else, what the other personalities are. You know, the world is going to end because we are, maybe the president's going to pull out of this Paris Accord. It reminded me of watching Andy McCarthy on Fox. I'm going to say some harsh things here. But Andy was on, along with Niles Gardner, with it was on with Eric Bolling and the two other girls that are on there with him. And I just thought, you know, I'm not sure, you know, here are these two brilliant men who have so much information and knowledge paired with girls who, you know, have about a knowledge about a mile wide and an inch deep. It's just the inequity. We've got people talking about things who know nothing. And so that just occurs to me. I had to say it. All right. The Paris Climate Treaty, we've talked about it a number of times. And when the president was overseas in his recent trip and met with the leaders of NATO, it must have come up. Myron Ebel, no one has done more to try to get this thing tanked than my next guest. And Myron is a friend. You've heard him many times on the show. He's the director of global warming and international environmental policy at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Myron, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Sandy.
All right, let's go back to last week in Europe. Do you know, did the president come under pressure from any of those NATO leaders to stay in the climate change treaty?
Yes, I think Pope Francis first leaned on him, and then I think at the NATO meeting, and then particularly at the G7 summit in Sicily, I think the president, the other leaders, from the big economies, I think they made a wrong decision in the way they tried to pressure Trump. They didn't give any ground on other things, and I think he was offended by the reaction to his call that countries like Germany ought to live up to their commitments under NATO to spend at least 2% of their GDP on military spending. So I think probably that was our big danger point, but I think at the end the G7 actually helped us in terms of convincing President Trump that his campaign promise is something that he wants to keep.
Well, I wondered about that too. It's like when it comes, it really does boil down to personalities. We think of all these grand issues, and they are grand issues, but it kind of boils down to personal interactions. And I would say, you know, it was pretty obvious that the European leaders, by and large, can be extremely snobby. They are walking out of a worldview that is the opposite of what President Trump campaigned on. And so it's oil and water, and combined with the arrogance, and you know that's not going to play well with him. So it didn't surprise me to hear, at least initially, that he had decided to pull out. But really, what is the story here, Myron? Is he going to or is he not?
Well, we'll know at 3 p.m. Eastern time today or soon thereafter. That's what he said last night, that he's going to announce it today. But the signs look good that he's going to keep his promise. Now, the question is, which route is he going to choose to do that? And there are several different routes. And we have been promoting two of them, and I'll start by mentioning one. This agreement, the Paris Agreement, really is a treaty, and it should be submitted to the Senate for its advice and consent. President Obama thought that he could just do it all himself and he could get away with it because if his successor was a Democrat, they wouldn't challenge it, and if his successor was a typical Republican, he wouldn't challenge it. But President Trump is not typical. He did promise that he would withdraw. So I think the best way is to submit it to the Senate and ask for its advice and consent. That means that once the Senate votes it down, the president can say, you see, it's not me against the world. It's the U.S. Congress against the world. We have, you know, these are the elected representatives of the people.
Well, McConnell, I guess, sent a letter along with 22 other, or including him, 22 senators asking the president to withdraw from it. But has he taken, McConnell, taken a public position on whether he wants it back in the Senate so they can actually vote on it and do away with it for one last time?
No, I don't think that the majority leader has taken a public position, and it's my understanding that he has resisted the idea that the Senate should vote on it. I think that's a mistake. I think it's a good test, but I think it's always a good idea to get members of Congress on a vote to see where they stand on important issues. This is a very important issue. I think it would be a good idea to have a vote. I think that they're still licking their wounds in the Senate Republican leadership over the mess they made over the Iran agreement, and they'd rather not take up anything messy that could turn out messily again. Now, I don't think this would, but I think there's just some reluctance to do it again. Now, that letter was led by the real leader on these issues in the Senate, Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma, who is, of course, a great champion of many of our issues. And uh, I don't I can't speak for him, but I think a lot of the signers of that letter would not object to having a vote in the Senate on this and getting rid of this once and for all.
Well, I know that we need to address the fact that part of the ambivalence on this, a huge part of it, is the division within the Trump people that are working in the Trump administration. You know, because Mr. Trump was very clear when he was campaigning that he was going to be the champion of coal miners. He had them appear at his rallies. He was going to turn back this treaty. He was going to restore America's strength and not drain jobs from the economy and money from the economy, for that matter. But inside the administration, now we have division. Like, for instance, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. He is a complete supporter of this Paris Climate Agreement, isn't he?
Yes, and so is ExxonMobil.
Oh, yeah, which was the company that he was. Yeah, that doesn't. All right, so why would these big oil companies, Myron, be in favor of that agreement, American oil companies?
Well, the switch from coal to natural gas is based on the wide availability now of natural gas, which is very cheap. Exxon owns a lot of natural gas reserves, and they would like to make some money out of them rather than selling their gas for very little. And if you can eliminate coal out of the electricity mix, then we'll need a lot more natural gas, and Exxon will make quite a lot of money. That's their plan. So they have, and also they're a big international company, and they don't like to have a bad, of course, they do have a bad reputation because the environmental groups portray ExxonMobil as public enemy number one. But Exxon thinks that if they just act nice, they'll eventually not be public enemy number one anymore for the environmental groups. I don't think that's going to work, but no. That's their strategy.
That's what everybody, isn't that amazing how people never figure that out? From politicians to entertainers, you know, trying to please the left is just you have to just do what you know is right, which is what we figured out a long time ago, didn't we, Myron?
Right.
So, all right, but then we have to talk about the other more influential person inside the White House that's kind of stirring things up, and that's White House National Economic Council Director Gary Cohn, who's a former Goldman Sachs banking executive, and he is trusted by President Trump, and he is the one who really keeps sending out these counter narratives, it seems to me, that, oh, no, mm-hmm. The president's changing his mind on this. So speak to that. What's behind that?
Well, you know, Goldman Sachs has been for this kind of climate policy stuff for decades, and we also had, as President George W. Bush's Treasury Secretary, another former CEO and chairman of Goldman Sachs, Hank Paulson, and he was just as committed. And again, Goldman Sachs hopes to make hundreds of billions of dollars over decades by being a middleman in a carbon trading scheme and where we have carbon credits, and some companies have them to sell and other companies want to buy them. And once we get that kind of scheme, then Goldman Sachs believes that they will become immensely wealthy off of this.
Oh, boy. That's a pretty dreadful report. My understanding about Gary Cohn, too, Myron, is that he was on the list to work for Hillary Clinton had she won the nomination, that he's a Democrat. So it's an odd placement, isn't it, to have him in that position?
Well, you know, the establishment, the financial and political establishment in D.C. and New York, and it just never goes away. It's there, and they always seem to do well out of things. I think the whole point of President Trump's energy agenda, it's part of his economic plan to get economic growth back to the heartland states, not the financial sector, not the entertainment sector, not the managerial sector or the bureaucrats here in Washington, but it's to get economic growth back to our productive industries, resource industries, and manufacturing industries. And the people who work in those jobs, agriculture, energy production, minerals, energy-intensive manufacturing, these are the people who've had a stagnant economy now for a long time. And there's a reason. One of the principal reasons for that is all the environmental regulations that are obstacles to investment. So if President Trump can get rid of some of these regulations, then there's hundreds of billions of dollars waiting to be invested back in America. And Paris is a key part of that, because if we're in the Paris Treaty, environmental groups and state attorneys general like Eric Schneiderman in New York are going to go to court and say, hey, no, you can't get rid of the so-called Clean Power Plant because that's part of our commitment under the Paris Treaty. So this is a very important it sounds just like it's just all about international stuff, but I think it has very profound consequences for our domestic economy.
Well, I think most people, even if they can't explain all the nuances of this or know all the science of it, like you do, Myron, they're getting the understanding. That's why I'm actually not going over the basics again with you, because I think people understand, and certainly the coal miners understand, and that's why they stood with Donald Trump in his election. I want to read you some responses to this hint and that, or this actually statement yesterday morning by some that Donald Trump was going to withdraw. So here's how it goes down. The Secretary General Antonio Guterres of the United Nations said, "Climate change is undeniable. Climate change is unstoppable. Climate solutions provide opportunities that are unmatchable." And then Sierra Club's Executive Director Michael Bruin says, "This will be a historic mistake, which our grandchildren will look back on with stunned dismay at how a world leader could be so divorced from reality and morality." And then last but not least, Nancy Pelosi, the scientist from California, referred to it as a stunning abdication of American leadership and a grave threat to our planet's future. Myron, this is the kind of stuff that people around the globe are hearing, and the people who watch CNN and other outlets are hearing a steady drip of this. How are they to know the truth? Seriously, how in the world are we going to combat this kind of propaganda, which is molding people's minds on climate change?
Well, Sandy, this is a big question. I should say Michael Bruin of the Sierra Club said last fall that I was, quote, one of the greatest single threats to the survival of the planet. You might sort of get the idea that he occasionally exaggerates a little.
Well, Myron, you are a force to be reckoned with, but I guess I never put you in that category.
if President Trump can actually implement his agenda and get it going, and the economy gets turned around, and we get some growth back. You know, we haven't been at average economic growth at any year during the past 10 years, which is 3% per year since 1880 is our average economic growth. The highest we got in the Obama years was 2%. And the financial sector has done fine. The high-tech sector has done fine. Because the high-tech sector isn't overregulated. In fact, it's hardly regulated at all. And yet these are the people out in Silicon Valley and San Francisco who are pushing all this stuff. So my view is if President Trump can actually cut through the smog here in Washington that the swamp puts out and just get this done and turn the economy around, then I think a lot of these people like Nancy Pelosi will look like yesterday's women. We won't have to worry about them so much, and people won't take them seriously. We'll see. It's not the end of the world. It's the beginning of a much brighter future.
Yeah, the echo of what you just said, Apple, Google, even Walmart are all about the Paris Climate Treaty. And then ExxonMobil, yeah. BP, and Shell. And you just explained what their motivations are, which I did not know. So it's just amazing. And this AP article written by Julie Pace and Catherine Lucy they even say here, Myron, that they say something about, they make the point that if we pull out, we'll be aligned only with Russia. So in other words, you know what that means. The hint, hint, here we are once again aligned with Russia on something. So I guess deepens.
Russia's party to the Paris Treaty. All the big countries are. I think some are, like the United States, somewhat skeptical about it. For example, I think Japan is somewhat skeptical, and I think if the United States leads the way and tries to turn the direction of world policy around on energy use, I think some countries will, over the next few years, also turn around. But I think the U.S. will have to lead the way to a brighter future.
All right, Myron,
Japan.
3 o'clock today, we'll find out. Myron Abel, Director of Global Warming and International Environmental Policy for CEI. Thank you, Myron.
But they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Arch-feminist Gloria Steinem said global warming is the product of overpopulation. She goes further, saying that childbirth is threatening the planet. But God's word says the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein. Plus, God says children are a blessing. So we have Gloria Steinem on one side and God's word on the other. I think prudence requires that we go with the Lord on this one. Gloria Steinem proves rejecting God causes futility in one's thinking.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hello, friend. I'm Pastor Ron Jones, and I'm glad to tell you something good has come to American Family Radio. Something Good is a daily half-hour Bible teaching program that I'm hosting at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. In a world full of so much bad news, we're glad to bring you something good. Learn more at somethinggoodradio.org. That's somethinggoodradio.org.
AFA Action Alerts. When you subscribe, we'll notify you once or twice a week about a critical issue facing our country. AFA Action Alerts have been very successful in influencing legislation, as well as getting positive results from America's Fortune 500 companies. Subscribe to your AFA Action Alerts today. Together, we are making a difference. Go to AFA.net and click on the Resources tab.
A pardon is the promise of freedom from imprisonment regardless of guilt. Hi, Kim Katola for Cradle My Heart Today. Such a promise can be so powerful for women like Lisa. Trauma after abortion led from a suburban upbringing to drug addiction and prostitution on the streets of Washington, D.C. Lisa felt doomed by the weight of her wrongs. Yet her story shows the power of God's love no matter how broken our lives have become. God's word promises that our sin does not equal a death sentence. Through repentance in Christ, Lisa learned that Jesus paid it all. We are forever right with God. We are fully free. The only question is this: how will we respond to God's great gift of love? Find a network of Christ-centered organizations offering help for unplanned pregnancy and hope after abortion at cradlemyheart.org. Saving lives and healing hearts after abortion, one story at a time. CradleMyHeart.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Trump reportedly has decided to ignore pressure at home and abroad and withdraw the United States from the Paris Climate Change Accord. Since Barack Obama cynically refused to negotiate and treat this deal as a treaty, Mr. Trump can walk away from it at will, and he should. Now, if you believe that dangerous climate change is occurring, that it's due to human activity, and that changes to that activity will actually have a perceptible effect on the climate, all three of which are hotly disputed by serious scientists, there's good news. American entrepreneurs are helping our country greatly reduce greenhouse gases through private sector action, not by government fiat. That practice will assuredly continue as long as it makes economic and commercial sense, or just makes investors feel socially responsible. But spare us the transnationalists' sanctimonious and sovereignty-sapping Paris mandates. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
You know, I was going to talk a little bit about some of the news stories, but I, you know what I'd really like to talk to you? I've enjoyed so much this is not much time. I recognize our phone number is 888-589-8840. We can talk about anything we've been discussing this week. Certainly what's happening in terms of investigations and leaks and all of that is fascinating to me. But really, whatever you want to talk about, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. 8840. Mike Emanuel had a fascinating story last night on Fox about what the Democrats are planning for the summer. Let's listen.
Democrats are revealing their summer playbook, trying to tap into anger their base is feeling.
Texas Democrat Congressman Mark Vesey explained why he was dressed down, offering up some red meat in Dallas today.
We have to take on the President of the United States. We have to take on Paul Ryan. We have to take on Mitch McConnell. It's time for us to take our jackets off. It's time to take our ties off. And it's time to start fighting.
House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi tried to energize a labor and activist audience.
So the middle class, which is the backbone of our democracy, really depends on our activism in the resistance summer.
And Pelosi issued this call to action in order to protect Obamacare.
Say, call your member of Congress and tell him or her not to take away our health care.
Others are taking to social media.
We'll fight our hearts out up here. I mean, that's the deal. I will. I'm fighting before I wake up in the morning, and I'm still fighting when I go to bed at night.
There are also efforts to continue harping on the ongoing Russia investigations. Three Democrat senators, Carper of Delaware, Heinrich of New Mexico, and Peters of Michigan, sent this letter to Director of National Intelligence Dan Coats earlier this month. Quote, "We write to request a review and damage assessment regarding whether any classified information may have been disclosed by the president or his senior advisors to representatives of the Russian government during a meeting in the Oval Office on May 10, 2017. At an event last night in New York with former late-night host David Letterman, Minnesota Democrat Senator Al Franken talked about, quote, some cooperation between the Trump campaign and the Russians, adding, I think everything points to that. Franken was asked about that assessment of interaction between some in the president's inner circle and Russian officials this morning.
These meetings weren't disclosed, and there's a whole bunch of these from Trump administration officials or former Trump administration officials. They aren't acting like people who have nothing to hide.
A year ago, it was the Trump campaign and Republicans attacking Hillary Clinton's handling of classified information and her use of a private email server, perhaps a sign of lessons learned by Democrats from the 2016 campaign.
Okay, Mike Emanuel, and of course, this is Resistance Summer. You hear that. They're going to keep pressing, and they are emphasizing that they must keep pressing the Russian narrative, which I believe is totally fabricated. I just don't know where they're going to go with this. It's been a year, and they have nothing. And when pressed, they still have nothing. Even Dianne Feinstein said, well, so far we're not sure. Where's the evidence? Where is the there? Where's the beef, as the old commercial said, because there is no beef. But they're trying to find it. And as a matter of fact, Jared Kushner, the House Democrats sent a letter, 40 of them, urging the White House to revoke Jared Kushner's security clearance to protect national security, because now allegedly, you know, he too is colluding with the Russians. And you have to know that this is a technique that's being used by the left, even inside the White House, to control people in the national security sphere who don't have the right kind of thinking. They are revoking their security clearances, which is just, and it's been crippling. Honestly, if you work in that sphere, you have to have a security clearance so you can't get employed. Some of them have moved to offices in remote locations because they can't do anything without a security clearance. This is the way of controlling people who are on the wrong side of things for those that have infiltrated the White House. So now they're trying to take Jared Kushner's away. And by the way, our phone number is 888-589-8840. And just as a programming note, gentlemen, I don't see anything on the screen here for callers. And we're changing our software for the screening. So just so you know, I know you don't have to know every detail, but we're kind of in transition here. And so we may have a few bumps here, but we'll work through them. 888-589-8840 is the number, and hopefully I'll get to go to your calls in just a second. Well, you know, Hillary Clinton is all over the place now, appearing, talking about why she lost the election. And Jennifer Griffin did a pretty good report on it last night. Let's listen. This is clip one.
This was Hillary Clinton as I have not seen her before. It was as though she were laying out a case for not only why she lost the election, pointing fingers for the first time about who it was from the Trump campaign who she believes colluded with the Russians during the election, and in her words, weaponized data to tilt the election. She makes the case against New York hedge fund heiress Rebecca Mercer, whose family fortune teamed up with an analytic firm in England called Cambridge Analytica to not only affect the outcome of the Brexit vote in England, but also to help the Trump campaign. Her condition, that Trump hire Steve Bannon and Kellyanne Conway to run the campaign.
The Mercers did not invest all that money just for their own amusement. Mm-hmm. We know they played in Brexit, and we know that they came to Jared Kushner and basically said, we will marry our operation, which was more, as it's been described, psychographic sentiment, a lot of harvesting of Facebook information. They married content with delivery and data. And it was a potent combination.
Clinton said her email scandal was a, quote, nothing burger. She said she and her campaign tried to get people to focus on Russian interference in the election rather than her emails. She also blamed Facebook as a key reason she lost.
And there have been some studies done since the election that if you look, let's pick Facebook, if you look at Facebook, the vast majority of the news items posted were fake. They were connected to, as we now know, the 1,000 Russian agents who were involved in delivering those messages. They were connected to the bots that are just out of control.
Clinton also took aim at the Democratic Party, saying she, quote, inherited nothing from them in terms of data analytics, adding the party was bankrupt when she got the nomination.
Well, it's amazing. If we have more time, I'd play more clips. She says there were a thousand Russian agents generating fake news, and that's what caused it. She says that WikiLeaks colluded with the Russians, and you know, I'm telling you, that we're just not seeing that, and that's where the Seth Rich story comes in. Seth Rich, the DNC staffer, who had access to all those emails. Who was murdered on the streets of Washington. That's where that story comes in, because it looks as though he might likely, not unlikely, but likely, have been the source of the leaks. He was a Bernie Sanders supporter, and of course the DNC was working behind the scenes to stop Bernie Sanders from being the nominee and to help Hillary. She should be praising the DNC, not complaining about them. I don't know if she's delusional or if she's just really a combination of that and a pathological liar. You know, she said in a public meeting last week, she referred to Nixon as, she didn't refer to him by name, but of course she worked on the effort to impeach him, and she said something about a president who was impeached referring to him. He wasn't impeached, though. The only president that was impeached in modern times was her husband, which she conveniently didn't mention. So she was really misled. Of course, the students are laughing because I guess, you know, duh, they just don't know. Like other college students around the country, they just don't know much except what they are fed and what happened in the last 5 years, maybe, sort of, if they can remember that. All right, let me go to the phone lines. I think we're in good order here. I can't see. Is it Lisa? I'm not sure the name here from Arkansas. Hi, Tara Lisa. You know what? The front's cut off. We're having a little trouble, so have patience with me. What's on your mind this morning?
Okay. I was wondering if not deporting the people that are reporting for their cards and stuff, they're picking these people up and they're abiding by the law. So I was wondering if they could possibly check into that better.
Check into which
and not
part?
Deport them, and not deport the people that are reporting for their cards, you know, when they have to go like to Memphis or wherever and report for their cards. A business owner went to report for his card, and they picked him up and deported him instead of deporting the people that are doing bad things.
Oh, okay. So this is something you know of personally.
They're abiding by the law, and they're getting picked up.
Oh, well, you know what? I don't know anything about this, Tara Lisa. And if that's the case, then that's certainly, I know that Attorney General Sessions would not want that. So is this something you know of personally?
Yes, one of my husband's coworkers, she had a husband and children, and she went to Memphis to report for her card, and they deported her.
But was she here illegally?
I'm thinking maybe something like that, like years ago. But since then, they had given her like a card to come back and report and stay, you know, in the system, so they would know where she was and all that stuff. And she was doing that.
Well, I guess, you know, my only caution to you is, you know, people will say a lot of things. I mean, I don't know your friend. So, you like, when if you go into prison ministry Almost every mm-hmm. prisoner you talk to is innocent. So, I mean, right. you know what I'm saying. So, you know, right. we'd have to be real sure about the facts on that. So just, and I know it's harsh, you know, but it, yeah. it is the reality. When yeah. you live, like, it's like if you committed a murder when you were 13 and all these years you've been sure. hiding it, you know, then suddenly you're caught and then you got a life and a family and it seems so unjust. But the fact is that justice eventually was brought, you know, brought to you. Now maybe somebody will show mercy, but that certainly is justice if she was not here legally. Terry, so that's the hard part that we find ourselves in. Hey, listen, it's nice to hear from you. It's been a long time, so thanks for calling. Let's go to Melody in Texas. Good morning, Melody.
Good morning, Miss Sandy, you troublemaker, you. Listen.
Yep.
Bless your heart. Listen, there's a verse in Proverbs referring to Miss Hillary Clinton. It refers to a woman that pulls her house down with her very own hands. I'm just always astounded that evil is always coming from the outside for those in the Democratic Party and those of their ilk. And Nancy Pelosi was her. The middle class is the backbone of our society. Obama's policies were never meant to do anything but to destroy the middle class. They wanted people to be, quote-unquote, equal. What Obama never could get and still sticks in his craw is that the Judeo-Christian God favors some. He's sovereign. He favors who he will, and he curses or causes chaos for those that he will. He never could get that. Still can't admit to it.
Yeah, that's an interesting bit of doctrine that we need more time to talk about, Melody. But it's a very interesting point that you make. Thank you very much. Let's go to Monty in Virginia. Good morning, Monty.
Sandy, just real quickly to say this. I am a product of the 60s in high school when civil rights came in, Jesus, Bible, and anything that looked godly went out. And today, we have 8 kids. Our 10-year-old and our 13-year-old think lying is part of their society, and that's the way you get by with things and not get caught. And it's really sad, Sandy, that you have to defend truth and justice and sincerity and things that we know are good. And Christianity is obviously very good. These people on these talk shows have one care about just being popular and having audience, but they do not care about ever telling the truth. And thank you for being such a great representative of our radio station.
Thank you, Monty. That's very sweet. I appreciate it. Hey, Chris, you got the last word down there in Texas. You have to make it quick, though.
Yes, Sandy, thank you for all that you do. I just wanted to comment that the Democratic Party is using immigration just for their benefit. You didn't hear about any of this before the election. And I'm a Hispanic down here in Texas, so I know what I'm talking about. There was no sympathy for Mexicans or immigrants even before the election. I just wanted to point that out.
You're saying they suddenly got concerned because it was election time. Is that what you're saying, Chris?
Definitely. You even heard quite the opposite, that it's an invasion and so forth coming from their camp.
Yeah. You know, Chris, just because you said you're Hispanic, and you know my last name is Rios because my first husband was Hispanic, I just have to make the point again. If it's the evident point, it is not about our ethnicity. It is about, this is about a question of being Americans. Anyone can be an American of any race, color, and creed. But we bond together around a set of values that are laid down in the Constitution and in our Judeo-Christian heritage, and it makes a people strong. That's what is so great about America, but it is not about ethnicity. And so there are a lot of Hispanic Americans like Chris who hate what's happening here because they are Americans first, and that would include lots of people. We just have to get the word out. Chris, thank you for your comments. And by the way, tomorrow we're going to do a whole program on the refugee resettlement issue. You're going to find it fascinating. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.